The Adventures of Elizabeth Crown presents The Palace of Wayward Dreams, Episode 8. By all means, snarled Elizabeth, waste away in your chair. Let the world forget you ever existed. Force your maid to coddle your invalid wife. Do whatever you damn well please. But tell me, who is Larimer? Sir Theodore Shanley looked shell-shocked. His lips were slightly parted, his eyes unblinking. When he swallowed, Elizabeth could hear the grind of his throat. He leaned forward, as slow as a drawbridge, and set down the glass of champagne. When he rose to his feet, Shanley seemed to levitate from his chair. He took a few steps and looked around, like a wronged man on his first day of prison. He rotated several times, then spread his hands across his face. When he spoke, his gravelly voice came through a crosshatch of fingers.
I was working in the garden, Shanley began. A morning constitutional. That was my ritual in Burma. Rise early, walk around a bit. It was cool after a long rain. The sun was low in the branches. All of our trees were teak. They were so lovely, especially in the morning mist. I remember it so clearly. Quiet out, except for the birds.
He paused. His hands peeled away from his face and dropped to his sides. For a moment, Elizabeth wondered whether Shanley had lost his will to go on. But then, in the faintest voice, he resumed.
I heard a noise. It sounded like mewling. I peered through the underbrush, and there I saw him. A little black cat. At first I thought he was a domestic stray. Perhaps he belonged to one of the coolies who lived nearby. But I looked closer, and I saw his fur coat, the shape of his head. I knew that he was wild.
A panther, Elizabeth whispered.
Yes, a newborn panther. His eyes were shut tight. He was so innocent. It was as if he had been placed there in the shrubbery for me to find. I didn't hesitate. I stole him from the bush and carried him to the parlor. I found a bottle of milk in the icebox. It already had a nipple affixed. I nursed him. He drank so deep, so long. I thought he might burst. He was so tiny. Such a beautiful creature. I knew he couldn't survive alone in the jungle. So, I kept him.
For how long? Shanley guffawed at this, a humorless sound.
How long indeed? How long could I have kept him? I put him in the shed at first. I couldn't tell Vicky. She would never understand. When he started to prowl about, knocking over cans, making a ruckus, I moved him to the root cellar. Every minute I could spare, I spent with him. But he grew, and kept growing. I brought him scraps, but they were never enough. After a few weeks, instincts took hold. He hid himself among the barrels. I coaxed him out from time to time. I lured him with water and strips of meat. But he would never eat out of my hand. He would snatch the food in his teeth and run away. I wanted to pet him, to hold him. I wanted so many things, which I knew in my heart were impossible. I waited so long sometimes that I overflowed with pain. I wept for hours, calling his name. But it was all for naught. He learned to conceal himself. I moved the barrels one by one. I could hear his purr. I could sense his movement, but I couldn't find him. Searching for Larimer was like chasing a shadow. I was always too slow, too lumbering. Everywhere I looked, I imagined he had just been. It maddened me to love something that refuses to show itself. So one day, I left the door open. I walked away, and I cannot recall how I survived the grief. I spoke to no one. Vicky thought I was sick, and she gave me chamomile tea, hoping it would revive my spirits. She's stronger than I am, you see. She can see the forest for the trees. She doesn't waste time on sentiment. But I am different. I never went to the root cellar again. Elizabeth waited a moment. She dabbed a tear from her eye. You know what I have to ask, she said. And you know I don't want to ask it. But I have to know. Why was there a bottle of milk in your icebox?
Because, said Sir Shanley, it was supposed to be for our son.
A newborn, said Elizabeth. Sir Shanley nodded and squeezed his eyes shut.
I never believed in reincarnation. When the Burmese spoke of it, I thought, how quaint, what charming people. What comforting folk tales. But a man of science would never stoop to such rubbish. You never believe a thing until you have to, and then you believe it with every fiber of your being. Our infant son, Larimer, was the pinnacle of my life. And then, suddenly, he was gone. He never survived his first week of life. I can't even remember his burial. It happened so quickly. We were too shocked to even mourn. We woke each morning, followed our routines, as if Larimer had been a dream. It might have stayed that way. We might have suppressed his loss until our final days. But then I saw that black kitten, lying there in the bush, and I knew it was him. I had a second chance. I could make amends. I could raise that panther like a boy, because to me he was my boy.
Shanley sniffed, and tears traced the lines of his face.
I couldn't bear the thought that he had only appeared to say goodbye.
And then, years later, you found this place, Elizabeth said quietly. She looked at Larimer, whose fleecy face had turned neutral. His eyes looked blurry, and his fur smudged. He was as expressionless as a doll. You created him.
I know what this is. An illusion. A fantasy. I know that. But once you have experienced a dream so real, once you take stock of how little there is to return to, what choice do you have?
Sir Shanley, Elizabeth said, standing up to her full height. Teddy, I know I'm nothing to you. I know I'm just some know-nothing girl. But O'Malley needs you, which means I need you. This society, whatever it is the only thing I've ever truly wanted. I want to learn. I want to understand. Can't you see? You can always come back here. Larimer will always wait for you. There's no shame in that. But if you die now, I'll never have what I want. Never. Just then, her vision shifted. The details of the room seemed blotted and miscolored, as if someone had redrawn the scenery in pastels. A dull ache thrummed in Elizabeth's brain, and she doubled over, pressing hands against her temples.
What was that?
When she looked up, Elizabeth saw Sir Shanley on his knees. One arm was wrapped around the back of his head, and his fingers were pressed into his neck, as if to fight a searing toothache.
Damn it all, Sir Shanley cursed. They're severing the line.
They're what? Sir Shanley shook his head and crawled toward Elizabeth on hands and knees. He reached the edge of the table and leaned against its surface.
Elizabeth lurched forward, but then her vision fizzed again. The room distorted. The ache in her forehead surged again. She heard Sir Shanley wail in pain. He fell over the chessboard, knocking over the pieces, and panted into the carven grid. "Sir Shanley," Elizabeth tried to cry, but the name sounded like gibberish, spoken into a smothering pillow. She tried to move, but her body would not respond. She felt herself recede, flatten out, surrender all dimensions. All at once, Elizabeth understood. They weren't sharing this vision. The vision belonged to Sir Shanley. The man had been here so long, his mind now dominated this world. It was his chessboard, his furniture, his palace. Everyone else was a guest in his mind. His imagination had fused with a fictional world. To uproot him now would tear that vision apart.
"Elizabeth," Shanley wheezed.
He seemed to speak from far away, another room, another universe.
"Do you swear to seek the truth, to cherish and protect it, to redress wrongs, to exact justice, to further the peace and prosperity of mankind?"
Elizabeth received the sentences one by one. She digested them in her mind, and all at once, she shouted into the thickening abyss, "Yes! Yes!" The room began to deteriorate. The floors and screens blurred, and the long table was besmeared into the background until every object became a fog of colors and forms. Elizabeth couldn't see the furniture's edges, nor could she even sense where one thing ended and the others began. Every surface blended into the others, washed together into a liquid collage. Then Elizabeth saw it, the Soma Lodge. Her eyes trembled open, but not all the way. Through the reedy jumble of her own eyelashes, Elizabeth could make out Sir Shanley, the real Sir Shanley, the shrunken figure in his chair. His body shook wildly, and O'Malley grappled his neck from behind. Lexi loomed above them both, and Elizabeth could just discern what she was doing, plucking the needles out of Sir Shanley's skin. She closed her eyes. She clenched them shut. Elizabeth felt herself descend back into the trance, saw the washed-out shapes of Sir Shanley's palace, the orange sun burning in the distance. She turned her head, a slow and arduous movement, and she saw Larimer. Larimer gazed at her. His eyes were soft, deep, not the eyes of a panther at all, but a human's. They appraised her with a soulful empathy, and just as Elizabeth was about to speak, a warbled voice flowed from the creature. His lips barely seemed to move, and it was not a sound so much as a thought, syllables swimming from one mind to another.
"Ecce," came the word, "ecce terrarum."
Elizabeth's eyes flew open. She swallowed smoky air and gasped at the ceiling. She reached up and grabbed the needles from her head and then ripped them out two at a time. She heaved for breath. Delirious, she slid down the chair's cushioned back. Across the room, she watched Sir Shanley writhe, but her limbs were useless. Her body felt like jelly.
"Ecce," she sputtered.
O'Malley looked up, his eyes focused on her.
"Elizabeth," he shrieked. "Elizabeth, are you all right?"
"Ecce terrarum," she garbled back.
"Ecce terrarum."
She watched the bearded man in the riding boots open his eyes. The Indian couple shuddered and their fingers curled, signaling consciousness. The room was coming alive. The Soma Lodge vision was vanishing from their minds. The electrical currents began to fizzle in their wires. The figures touched the needles, remembering slowly where they were, how they came here. Elizabeth mumbled to herself. Her body was anchored in the chair. The room shifted and swayed before her,
just like the steamship's cabin. This place felt no more real to her than Sir Shanley's palace of wayward dreams. Neither place felt tangible. Elizabeth did not belong to either world, real or imagined, but to both. And with that thought, her head dropped forward, and everything went dark. "Easy does it," O'Malley said, sitting down beside Elizabeth and setting a cup of tea on her nightstand. Silvery sunshine eased through the guest room window, and Elizabeth squinted into the morning light. As her limbs stretched beneath the thick quilt, Elizabeth realized she was still wearing her clothes from the previous night. She wondered how she had come here, how long she'd slept, who had put her to bed. "How are you feeling?" O'Malley murmured. "Like a drowned cat," Elizabeth said, yawning into the back of her hand. All at once, she remembered the chaos. Emotion shot through her spine, exploding in her head. She sat up in bed and tore the blanket aside. "Where is Sir Shanley?" "In his room," said O'Malley, laying his hands over hers. Is he all right?" "He's..." O'Malley licked his lips. "He will be all right." Elizabeth turned sideways, letting her legs dangle over the side of the mattress. She gazed into O'Malley's eyes. "He had a stroke, didn't he?" "Yes," conceded the professor. "How bad?" O'Malley grimaced. "It could have been a good deal worse." Elizabeth's head pounded. Her stomach felt empty, and she yearned for breakfast, tea, and a walk in the sunlight. She felt drained after all that darkness and turmoil, but the excitement still burbled beneath. She wanted to tell O'Malley everything. The dream, the Oriental Palace, the chess match, Larimer, all of it. She could not believe how much could transpire in a single day. She started to slide off the bed, but O'Malley held out a hand. "Before we join the others, there's a matter to address."
"Yes?"
"What did you say back at the Soma Lodge, just before you fainted?"
"Please," Elizabeth recoiled. "Ladies in corsets faint. I like to think I collapsed from exhaustion."
O'Malley leered at this, but the way he blinked his eyes suggested he wished to move on.
"It was something I heard," Elizabeth said. "In the vision, there was a figure there. He said, 'Ecce Terrarum.' Does that mean something?"
O'Malley nodded solemnly, then fiddled with one of his buttons.
"It's Latin," he said. "Ecce Terrarum. It means, 'Behold the world.'"
"Behold the world?"
"Yes."
O'Malley stood up and adjusted his glasses.
"If Sir Shanley said this to you, it means he holds you in very high regard."
"Me? Why?"
"I can't speak for him, but I think diving headfirst into another man's dream and then trying to rescue him from his melancholy did something to impress him."
Elizabeth smiled.
"Well, that's what I always do on Thursday nights."
O'Malley didn't react to this. He stared at her with quivering eyes.
"Ecce Terrarum is what we say to welcome someone to our ranks."
He held out a hand.
"So, Elizabeth, welcome to the Order of Sashat."
That concludes The Palace of Wayward Dreams by Robert Eisenberg. The Adventures of Elizabeth Crown are produced by Backpack Media, LLC. Original music by Naoya Sakamata and Sixamatic. If you like what you're hearing, you may also enjoy The Mysterious Tongue of Dr. Vermilion and Other Stories, the first book in the Elizabeth Crown series.
For more information about the exciting field of uncanology, visit elizabethcrown.net.